Well, good morning, Jacob's Well.
Good morning.
It's great to have all of you with us today. My name is Peter Crist. I'm one of the pastors here with Jacob's Well. Greg Meyer and Don Fugelstadt are at our other location that meets the Field School this morning. But it's great to be here with you today, especially for those of you who might be your first time visiting us at Jacob's Well. We are thrilled to have you here and grateful that you found your way inside. I feel like I have to start with a disclaimer. If you've taken a closer look at my face this morning, you notice that there's some fuzz underneath my nose and on my upper lip. I'm growing a mustache because during the month of November, there's a movement. It's called Movember. Men grow a mustache and hopefully raise awareness for men's health, particularly prostate cancer. And I'm actually in the process of trying to raise some money. And so I've kind of threatened, I'm going to wear the mustache until I raise $200 or November 30th, whichever comes first. So I'm not just kind of a weird, creepy guy who's growing this goofy-looking mustache. Well, that's not the reason I'm a weird, creepy guy. But anyway, so that's my disclaimer about the fuzz underneath my nose today. So you hopefully received, when you walked in the door today, a yellow piece of paper. And I want to describe this to you. If you were with us last week, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But this is a new thing that we've started, and we're kind of testing it out during this series, seeing how it goes. But this is a bit of a prayer ministry. Now, you heard Anna tell you about your communication cards, and then on the back of that communication card, you can certainly write a prayer request there, and know that that prayer is prayed over by a ministry team, a group of folks over the course of the week. We pray over those together corporately in a group, and there's a number of people who are responsible for those. But this is something different. This little piece of paper, we want you to take some time during the message today and think about a specific prayer concern that you might have. It might be something going on in your life. It might be something going on in the life of somebody else that you care about deeply. Or maybe it's a more larger concern. And you can kind of write a little bit of an anonymous prayer. Pray for my brother. For peace in the Middle East, or I mean, you decide what is important to you. But write one prayer down on this little piece of paper, and then fold it up. And when we collect our offering after the message today, pass these, kind of don't put them in the offering bag, but pass them down. And those who bring up the offering today, take the yellow pieces of paper, and we're going to put them in this basket right here on the next to the well, or on the well here. And then if you've chosen to do this, at the end of the service today, when you're leaving, Jeff will be at the back door there. He'll have this basket. I want you to reach in and grab out a prayer. And that means that you're going to be carrying around a prayer with you this week that someone else has written. Put it in your pocket. And when you stick your hand in your pocket and you feel that piece of paper in there, pull it out and read it and pray it. Pray over that little prayer. Praying it is just as simply as kind of acknowledging it or reading it aloud or reading it silently to yourself. Maybe you want to spend more time with that. I got to say, I was a part of this. We started this last week, and I still actually have my prayer in my pocket from last week. And there was really a moving and powerful thing for me. Just the idea of taking that time, a few seconds of each day or a few times each day, and praying over that was good. And each time I did it, I also had the experience that I was reminded of the prayer that I had written on a different piece of paper, and someone else, I don't know who, was walking around this week doing the same thing. And so I want you to participate in that with us this week. So think about what prayer you might put onto your yellow piece of paper, and then we'll collect those at the time of offering. So it's a month of prayer for us. Well, we launched a series last week, and we're calling this Saints, a series on the saints, or some people would call them Jesus freaks. But ultimately, this is a really fun kind of 4 weeks for us, where this is the second week. Greg Meyer was here last week at Longfellow, and he took kind of one of the kind of characteristics. What is it about saints, the kind of historical saints? What is it about them that has any value for us today? Well, we kind of broke it down into four kind of categories and four aspects. Because saints are a lot more than just dead, pious people who've been canonized by the church. That's the kind of technical term for it. They're actually we look upon them as something kind of extra holy. They're set apart. And yet, for us today, we really want to think about how they're not. It's not something unique. This set apart status, this holy status, isn't just for the saints. It actually refers to us and refers to our lives and how God looks upon us and sees us operating in the world as holy people, set apart, doing something different. And hopefully in the midst of this series, you can see yourself in terms of these kind of four characteristics of, and we'll talk about those in a second, but kind of these four ways of looking at yourself and how God sees you and how God sees you active in the world. We have a Bible verse that we're using as kind of our focus text for this four-week series, and you have it on the back of your Sunday paper in your handout area there. At the very top of that is that text, and I want to read it aloud here for you, just so that we kind of all get this set in front of us. This is from 1 Peter. You are the ones chosen by God, chosen for the high calling of priestly work, chosen to be holy people, God's instruments to do His work and speak out for Him, to tell others of the night and day difference that He's made for you. This gives us some sense of what it means to be called a saint, certainly to be considered a saint by ourselves, by God, that we have been chosen as a holy people, that there's something unique about us, and we've been set apart by God to do something very particular, to do His work, speak for Him in the world, and to tell others why that matters, and why that has any difference in your life today. So we're going to try and kind of work through this a little bit. Each of the 4 weeks has its own component. Last week here you heard Greg talk about how saints are martyrs, or essentially that they give their lives over to something, that their lives are more important about just what concerns them, that there is a broader purpose that God has planned for them. And that saints, or you and I, who really see it in the correct way, are going to see beyond ourselves. And we're going to be able to buy into those principles. God doesn't want us to die. He wants us to live, but wants us to live for Him. And that's a different way of looking at it. In the next 2 weeks, we're going to look at how saints are countercultural, how they really are set apart outside the norm, something different. Saints are weird. That's what we're calling it. And then saints also have a unique connection to God. They're close to God. Certainly prayer is a big part of that, but there are a lot of other things that come along with that. And Don's going to be teaching us about why saints are close to God and how that should really impact our lives. But today we get to talk about a really fun topic. Today we get to talk about how saints do miracles. Now, to become a saint, kind of the historical canonized saint by the kind of historical church, and now the Roman Catholic Church, there are certain criteria that you have to have. One is you have to be dead, actually. You have to pass away, and then they'll consider you for sainthood, right? So the saints are kind of come from a fair amount of history, but certainly recent history as well. But they have a certain kind of connection to God that's recognized. One of the things that you have to attach to a saint is that they have to have a relationship to miracle. Now, in the early history of the church, sometimes those miracles happened while the saint was walking around, and they would say, "Oh, he or she did something really spectacular while they were alive." Most of the time it's after they've passed on and they've been dead, people say, "Oh, I prayed to Saint so-and-so that something would happen," and something happens, and they say, "Oh, that was a miracle," right? So today we're going to kind of unpack what this means to be, that saints and miracles, the connection between sainthood and miracles, and how that actually might have something to do for us in our life. I mean, it really raises the question, what is a miracle? How do we kind of get our heads into what it means to do and participate in miracles? Well, I'm going to roll a video here that gives you one sense of what might be a miracle.
Johnson, 19 seconds. Johnson over to Ramsey. They let him off. Gets seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Is that a miracle? Probably. I actually remember watching that on TV with my dad. I was 10 years old. It was pretty exciting. And it felt like a miracle. It felt like something that couldn't possibly have happened any other way other than just divine intervention somehow. And so getting at the sense of what it means to me, a miracle. Now, hopefully my tech person back there is going to roll along with me, because I skipped a little thing that I want to talk about. I want to talk about a historical saint for a second. Saint Nicholas. We all know Saint Nicholas, and in fact, when I say that, you probably say, well, it's Peter, what's going on? Saint Nicholas, aren't you jumping the gun here a little bit? It's a little early for us to be talking about Saint Nicholas. But the Saint Nicholas that we kind of associate with Santa Claus actually has its origins in a historical figure. Nicholas of Myra lived in the 3rd, 4th century, came from a Christian family, which was kind of actually unique from the 3rd and 4th century. There weren't a lot of Christians. It was expanding rapidly, but there still weren't a lot of Christians. And Nicholas came from a family of Christians, and he lived a fairly pious life. He really did believe deeply in his connection to God, and wanted to live in a certain way that you could identify him as being Christian. He was ultimately asked to serve as a bishop of a church, a bishop of an area, responsible for all the Christians in a particular area. In that place, kind of two quick stories I want to tell you about him. One is that he became aware of a family with a widower with three daughters. And he was not very wealthy, and knew that as his daughters were aging, he wouldn't have the money to provide a dowry in order to get them kind of married off into the good family. And so that ultimately what might happen then is he'd have to sell off his daughters, and typically would end up, you know, in some sort of kind of bondage, you know, some sort of, sexual service or something like that. I mean, just horrible ideas about what might happen to his daughters, and it was really stressful for him. So Nicholas heard about this man, and he secretly started throwing bags of gold coins into his house. Now, how that happened, or, you know, the pacing of which it all happened. But when the third bag of coins was delivered, he was worried that the guy was getting wise to who might be putting these coins in there, and he wanted to remain anonymous, so he dropped the last bag of coins down the chimney. So we can see where some of our traditions around St. Nicholas, St. Nick, Santa Claus, maybe originated. More importantly, Nicholas ultimately became the patron saint of a variety of Christian communities as they started to kind of develop in the early history of the church. And there are countless examples where people prayed to St. Nicholas to intervene in times of trouble. When persecutions were happening in the early Roman Empire, and later on when the Turks were starting to invade, people would pray to St. Nicholas for deliverance, and they were delivered. And it was truly miraculous when these occasions happened. St. Nicholas was one of the most powerful miracle makers of the time. People really looked to St. Nicholas to be that miraculous, to provide those moments of miracle. But really, again, I asked this question, what is it about a miracle? So I decided to do a little bit of research in preparation for this message. I did a very scientific study, like many of you would. I went and turned to one of the most profound places to get good research these days. I went to Facebook, and I posted a question to my Facebook universe and said, have you experienced a modern-day miracle? And if so, how would you name it? And I had a whole host, that doesn't show the whole list, it was quite a lively discussion around modern miracles. And I kind of took that list and I boiled it down to kind of three categories. And you've got some fill-ins on your outline if you want to follow along. But the first kind of big category was that miracles really involve some sort of suspension of the laws of physics. That truly something you know, that you would say the laws of nature couldn't possibly allow for, when that happens, then it's truly a miracle. You know, the variety of ways of looking at nature. Now, here's something that an early church figure, Augustine, who himself became sainted by the church later on, had a really keen insight. And this is, you know, this is thousands of, almost 2,000 years ago. He said, miracles aren't contrary to nature. They're just contrary to what we know about nature. That's a good point, that we're still discovering stuff every day, and we don't really have all the answers. So maybe something that, you know, 50 years ago we thought would be a miracle, like being able to pull a little black thing out of your pocket, open it up, hit some buttons on it, and then talk to somebody on the other side of the world. 50 years ago, I mean, that would have been a miracle, right? So we're not really sure where miracles come from, but so there's something about how we exist in this nature, in creation, that has to do with miracles as well. Now, another category of miracles having to do where the seemingly impossible seems to become possible. Now, in my Facebook study, there were a lot of suggestions around sports analogies, like the impossibility of the Twins ever beating the Yankees in a game that mattered would be a miracle, right? The seemingly impossible somehow becoming possible. And ultimately, the majority of people's ideas around miracle had to do with stuff that still was possible, but it happened or occurred at just the right moment. That it was somehow serendipity. And really, serendipity that matters, that really made a difference in somebody's life at a particular time. Miracles, and I like this definition of a miracle because it's, you recognize the possibility of something happening, but the fact that it happened when and how and where it did really coincided with what really needed to happen at that moment. Serendipity that matters. Well, what does this have to do with God and God in our lives and miracles themselves? I want to make a suggestion today that the miracles, maybe it's serendipity, maybe it's a suspension of the laws of physics, maybe it's that really impossible thing becoming possible. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe that has something to do with God. Because God is active in this world. We look around us and we see unexplainable things happening all the time. But are we really seeing them? When God's activity in the world becomes realized, when we see something radical happening, a radical realization of God's will in the world might just be how we can consider miracles. When God has the opportunity to participate in our lives and the lives of the people around us, maybe that's when miracles really happen. So when I was looking at that list of Facebook miracles, I recognized that a lot of them you could kind of dismiss away pretty quickly. That you could say, well, yeah, that was possible, or, you know, that was coincidence, or, you know, can we really attribute miraculous activity? Can we really say and point to it and say that was God happening? Well, I think it's the wrong question to ask. The question is God happening in this? Can I see that God is happening in this? Am I able to open myself up enough to allow the possibility that God might be at work in these miraculous moments? It's not some sort of rationalization. When we consider miracles, we can't just rationalize away. It's not rationalization. It's actually revelation. When we're able to kind of twist our own frame of reference to the point where we can say, you know what? That is God at work. And these things that are maybe serendipitous or coincidence or really seemingly impossible becoming possible, that's exactly how God becomes present in this world and becomes realized. I want to play a little video and tell you a story about a study that was done a couple of years ago, actually back in 2007. We'll see if we can get that rolling. So in Washington, D.C., at a metro station on a cold January morning, So it was 2007, and there's a man. You can see him on the left side of your screen playing the violin. He played six Bach pieces for about 45 minutes. And during that time, approximately 2,000 people went through the station, walked through those doors, and walked right by him. Most of them were on their way to work. After about 3 minutes, a middle-aged man noticed that there was a musician playing, and he slowed his pace and he stopped for a few seconds. And then he hurried back to keep up with his schedule. About 4 minutes later, the violinist actually received his first dollar tossed into his open violin case. A woman threw money in the case, but didn't even stop. She just kept on walking. About 6 minutes in, a young man leaned against the wall to listen to him, and then looked at his watch and started to walk off again. At 10 minutes, a 3-year-old boy stopped, but his mother tugged him along hurriedly. The kid stopped to look at the violinist again, but the mother pushed hard and the kid continued to walk, turning his head the whole time. This action was repeated several times with other children, but every parent, without exception, forced their kid to keep on moving. At 45 minutes, the musician had played continuously, and only six people had stopped and listened for a short while. About 20 people did give him money, threw money into his open case, but that most of them just continued to walk at their normal pace and keep moving. The man collected about $32 in his 45-minute exercise. So he finished playing, and silence took over. Nobody noticed. Nobody applauded. There's no recognition at all. Nobody knew this, but the violinist was Joshua Bell, one of the greatest violinists in the world. He had played one of the most intricate pieces ever written with a violin that cost $3.5 million. 2 days before, Josh had played to a sold-out theater in Boston where the seats averaged $100 for people to sit and listen to him play the exact same performance. So it's a true story. Josh Bell, playing incognito in a D.C. metro station, was organized by the Washington Post and as part of a social experiment about perception and tastes and people's priorities. And for the Washington Post, they afterwards posited several kind of questions. So in a commonplace environment and at an inappropriate hour, do we perceive beauty? And if so, do we stop and appreciate it? Do we recognize talent in an unexpected context? So one possible conclusion that was reached from this experiment could be that if we don't have a moment to stop and listen to one of the best musicians in the world, playing some of the finest music ever written with one of the most beautiful instruments ever made, how many other things are we missing as we go through life? And here's the question it raises for me. How often do we fail to perceive, like beauty, God's presence in our lives? And why is it that we think we can only find God in specific places, places that we determine to be right or proper or logical? If our Christian story tells us anything, it's that God is found in the improper and the illogical and the improbable. So maybe understanding God's miraculous activity in the world is more a matter of us having our eyes open, having the eyes to see. Maybe it's a function of our own realities kind of getting blown apart and taking the time to slow down and looking for God in the world, busily active. So how does this happen? Well, there's a little bit of scripture I want to draw your attention to. It's written on your outline as well. This comes from Paul's letter to the Romans. and talks a little bit about the role of the Spirit, God's Spirit in the world. And God, who searches the heart, knows what is in the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. We know that all things work together for good for those who love God and who are called according to His purpose. The Spirit intercedes for the saints. That's you and me. We're the saints. We're the ones who are doing the work of God in the world. We're the hands that get to get dirty and work with all of the problems and the challenges and the joys and the celebrations in this place, in this time that we have here. We're the saints. And God's Spirit is a part of us and intercedes with us and communicates with God. And that's how it becomes that miracles happen. It's through you and me and the people around us. And those people, plenty of people who don't even realize it, that God is working in their lives. That's how God works. That's how miracles might just happen. Do you have the eyes to see how God is at work in the world? Almost 500 years ago, in fact, we kind of celebrated the anniversary of this last weekend, so it was good timing when I preached this message a week ago, but almost 500 years ago, Martin Luther, who was a monk and then a teacher, a theologian in Germany, had kind of grown up in a system and understanding the church, very, very faithful man, but he began to become increasingly bothered by how the church kind of considered holiness. That the church was kind of making the argument that you become chosen by God if you make yourself holy, if you do things that kind of exemplify your holiness, and maybe if you kind of earn a certain holiness through doing certain actions. And the church was really good about helping people figure out what they needed to do and helping them order their lives in particular ways. And it's because once people achieved certain levels of holiness, then they could see themselves as being chosen and set apart by God. That was really the goal. But Martin Luther decided that he thought maybe that was really backward. That ultimately, it wasn't our holiness that allowed us to be chosen by God. It's that we are chosen by God, and that's what makes us holy. God has already chosen you and chosen me and chosen those around us to do His work in the world, and that is what makes us holy. That is what allows us to see ourselves as saints, and that those around us are now saints, saints in the world. So, this message about miracles also is a message about vision. It's about opening your eyes to see yourself set apart. God has chosen you. He's called to you so that you can be a part of what God is up to in this world. We get to do miracles on God's behalf for you, for the people around you, and for people you've never met before. Pretty wonderful calling to have. So, I give thanks that you are here today to be a part of this, to open your eyes with me, to start seeing what these miracles are going on in the world around us. As the band gets ready to come back up, I want to just close with a word of prayer. God, I give you thanks that you gave us this day filled with possibilities. We see lots of things around us that feel impossible. We see nothing but need and brokenness and healing that isn't there. Open our eyes. Help us see that it's our hands that get to do your work in this world, and that it's our responsibility now to help make those impossible things become possible. Send your Spirit to us and help give us courage to take on those challenges that then present themselves. Help us do miraculous things in this world. Amen.